I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that, too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers, while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Should GLP-1 weight loss medication like Wegovy and Zepbound cost thousands of dollars? We don't think so. Try LifeMD.com helps provide insurance access to the leading GLP-1 medications. Visit TryLifeMD.com and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0. Listen to Bridget's story after losing 55 pounds and using her insurance for coverage.
LifeMD helped me get covered with my insurance. Finding out that it was covered was huge. I've lost 55 pounds. I am so much healthier now that I've lost the weight. I would never be able to do it without them.
Get started today and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0 at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're serious about getting better at mixing and producing, this is for you. Our Patreon gives you access to weekly ad-free technical episodes, plus a library of over 250 past episodes packed with mixing, mastering, and production knowledge you won't find anywhere else. Don't miss out. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start learning today. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Long Flight Lou.
And long flights they were. I think I've done more flying in these 5 days than I did in the last, since 2025 began. Since January 1st, I probably did more flying time in total than the rest of the year combined.
Good, nice. Yeah. Lou was out doing another show for... Can we exhibit. Say the name? Like exhibit? Okay.
Yeah. Sweet. Yeah. I mean, it's posted everywhere.
Sweet. For exhibit and in the Swiss Alps, which is kind of fun. Cool place to go on tour.
Yeah. The lineup was definitely really cool. Got to see a lot of people that I don't think that I would otherwise have taken the opportunity to go see. Not that the opportunities weren't there, but like seeing Busta Rhymes, Timberland, Eve, Coast Contra, MOP, and a bunch of acts like that. In the Swiss Alps is quite the unique opportunity, but I don't know if I would buy tickets as somebody in LA who can see them in LA a little more often than you can in the Swiss Alps. Like flying out there is maybe the deterrent on my end, but to have the opportunity to go work with them, like share a stage with them and also see them perform is just kind of a unique experience. So definitely something I bring back with pride on.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. It seemed fun.
Yeah.
And it seemed like a cool experience. I'm sure it's never easy, but I'm sure it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yo.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get into this episode. This is a big episode. This is one that we're probably going to touch on multiple times in the future, too.
Mm-hmm.
This is one. I need to say that neither of us are psychologists. We're just
but
nerds.
We are psychotic.
We are nerds in this field. I personally have a deep psychotic. Yeah. I personally have a deep interest in psychology and philosophy. But that's about as far as it gets. So take this with a big grain of salt.
But it's very real world, what the topic is.
It's very real world. Yeah. And I will say that we need to retouch on this multiple times, and this will become a reoccurring topic in different ways from different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one that not a lot of people talk about. Not enough people talk about. That's really, really important. people should be talking about this more. I really think that this is going to be a big, I think this is the biggest stumbling block for anybody pursuing audio as a career. Like, I don't think that there's any single stumbling block bigger than this across everyone. Cause it's like, it's generic enough. Everybody deals with this. And like, yeah, some people have other stumbling blocks. Like they deal with different societal, cultural things or whatever. But this is something that like every human experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you figure this out, I will go as far as to say, if you figure this part out, then your lifetime earnings will change dramatically. Yep. It may not be immediate, but over the course of your life and your career, this will also impact how you perceive your future family, if not your current family, your friends, yourself, amongst community, etc. This is a huge, huge topic, but we need to be clear. I am just a professional that is really nerdy, that reads a lot of books, that is observing patterns from other professionals. Same thing with Lou. We're observing patterns. We are biased. And this is a little bit of like what's called like availability heuristic, where we're making examples and using anecdotes based on what first comes to mind, mm-hmm. not what is true necessarily. So be aware of that. That being said, I feel strongly about this, and I hope that me and Lou can do this topic justice. Mm-hmm. I really hope we do. And this episode is about the importance of self-esteem and how that makes you a better engineer.
And how it makes can you actually stop you from being a better engineer.
Exactly. Yeah. Sincerely, like personal confidence leads to better collaboration. Mm-hmm. It leads to better communication. And it leads to happier clients. So the first thing that we're going to talk about is, and this is a category that we talk about on its own, which is communication. Mm-hmm. Me and James and Lou have talked about this. Like if you talk to anybody, any artist that often hires mixers, whether on the web or someone that they know, the number one complaint with why they stopped hiring this mixer is almost always communication based.
Yep.
Whether they did not respond back, I asked for an instrumental, they just stopped replying, they forgot about me. I felt my project fell through the cracks. I felt like I wasn't important enough. It is borderline almost never the sound of the mix. And if it is the sound of the mix, that's secondary to it was a bad mix, but it was mostly the communication. You know, like you can't do bad mix and bad communication.
I saw an example of this on Instagram. And plus, you see everything on Instagram. Not everything on Instagram or YouTube is amazing. So like we said earlier, take everything, even what we say, with a grain of salt. But there was one very true thing that was posted. I forget who posted it. If I remember, I'll shout them out. But they were talking about how just because somebody is behind the console doesn't mean that they're actually good when you see them in a high production value area, whether that be in a major studio or in, let's say, in like my world, like live sound and stuff. Like just because they're behind the console doesn't actually mean they're that good of an engineer. It just means that they actually have a very professional career where communication is probably their strongest point. It's very true. There are many situations where there are great engineers, producers, artists out there who are not very good at social media. And because of that, you don't really hear the word of them. And sometimes the issue isn't necessarily that they're not good enough to want to post or something. It's a lot of times that they don't believe that people will see that they see what they believe. And it comes down to your self-esteem. It's the reason that you might not walk into, let's say, a mixer because you don't think you belong there. It might be the reason that you don't put out the song just yet because your perfectionism is getting in the way of you putting the project out. But your self-esteem is so tied into who you are that it can actually affect your approach to your work. You know, that's why sometimes you hear Greasy Will, like these YouTubers are giving out bad advice and the real engineers are letting it happen or something like that. He doesn't say exactly that, but you know, he's like, I wish more people were out here giving the advice that actually had credits and this and that, who can speak confidently on it. But those same people who are very confident in their work may just not be very good at social media or don't like being in front of a camera and things of that nature. And it might just be that they're a little uncomfortable. Maybe it's imposter syndrome, whatever it may be. But, you know, your self-esteem can affect every factor of every opportunity that can help you grow.
Yeah. There's a lot of ideas bouncing in my mind, but this is a big
deal.
Hopefully
it's not an earthquake in your mind.
Yeah, this is a big deal. There's the part of the reason why I'm bringing this up and the reason why I'm thinking about this more often, how this is so pertinent and relevant to our industry, is because James, I don't know if it's okay. I'm going to say it. I don't care if it's okay or not. James paid good money, hired good money for like a coach, like a mixing business coach. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's like a mixing coach. I think it's a business coach specifically for mixers in LA. It wasn't cheap. It was a good amount of money. Which means it's working for that guy. Yeah, sure. Yeah. And I don't want to promote this guy for free on the podcast, like conflict of interest.
So we won't say anything.
So, but that being said, one of the first lessons that they had was, okay, what are some general insecurities that you have? And that keeps you from properly doing your best work. Like, what are some triggers that you have? Like, what are some general self-insecurity things that you have? And they kind of work together to figure that stuff out. And that made me think a lot about, like, why is that the first lesson? And marginally, why do I think that that's the most important lesson that one can give? That, to be fair, like, I think is more important. Why is that the lesson that I think is the most important over any sort of like systemization or project management skill or, system? And I've been thinking a lot about that. So let's talk about this real quick. Just some general studies that just to baseline create some authority. A 2011 study in the Journal of Applied Psychology found that employees with high self-esteem are more likely to be viewed as cooperative, dependable, and easy to work with in team settings. At the end of the day, we are freelancers and we're not necessarily employees as mixers and engineers and whatever. But there's two things that I think we could be saying. The first off is like the study shows, this is from 2011, right? Mm-hmm. Judge Erez and Bono, more likely to be viewed as cooperative, I think is important. And with the music industry, when music is so subjective, when everybody is kind of... basing collaboration based on a hope and a faith on each other and based on personal recommendations from each other, because it's really difficult to have like hard concrete evidence of success in everyone's like resume and background. Like that's really rare. So it's most likely like, why am I someone to bet on rather than saying, this is why like accolades and awards are so important in our music industries, because that's like the only way that you can have like hard concrete evidence of success in the past. Anything without any awards is like, these are the reasons why I show a high, strong reason that you should trust me. Right. But there's still no strongly concrete evidence to a certain degree. Right. Obviously that's a little bit flexible there, but in mixing, that means confidence helps you listen to feedback without reacting and hold your ground without becoming combative. This is a big quote that I really, really love. Okay. Pay attention to this. I'm going to read this twice. The artist is paying for the mix, not your identity. When your self-worth doesn't hinge on the outcome, you're more flexible, open, and collaborative. When your self-worth doesn't hinge on the outcome, you're more flexible, open, and collaborative. Which leads me to my first practical point that I want to talk about is the importance and the value of perceiving yourself and your role as a mixer as a balance between a few different things. Who do you do this for? Obviously, everybody, here's the thing. The unspoken common thing is that everybody that's in the music industry, that's trying to be in the music industry, whether it's conscious or not, has some desire for validation and for being cool. People want to do this to be cool, whether it's because they were nerds in the past or they're pursuing to be cool now or want to be seen highly by somebody else. You don't do this career path for money, you know?
Can I be honest? There's a part of me that does it for the cool stuff. like
the cool stuff, monitors, the recognition,
our microphones. No,
the nerdiness. Of course.
The nerdiness is a huge driving part. Every time I get a big project, I'm like, I can finally upgrade this to the next level.
But I mean, what drives you to want to work with bigger artists and with bigger projects? Is it the money, or is it some sort of validation?
I like to see validation through growth of the career.
Right. Exactly. So it's like whether it's there super consciously, like that is a unspoken part of everyone working in the industry that everyone, I don't want to say struggles with. A lot of people have figured it out, especially in like in the higher levels, like they've accepted that need for validation, kind of placed it where it needs to be and recognize it. Other people, it's like uncontrolled chaos and just it's just a black hole of need for validation that they are not aware of, and it's just sucking themselves and everyone around them dry. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. So number one, I think my first practical advice is when you're an engineer, you have to be doing things for the art. For some people, you may want to use different words like for the sake of humanity, for the universe. No, not even humanity. For the sake of the universe, for the sake of God. This is a big thing with Zen and Taoist. And he doesn't say it. But what's that book? Sorry, hold on. Give me 30 seconds here to find the book. The Creative Act, A Way of Being by Rick Rubin. He's very Zen. In that book, he doesn't use a lot of Zen and Buddhist words. But if you've read it at all, it's very abstract Zen ideology, and he'll use words like the universe and God, like it's all a prayer to the heavens or the prayer to God. That's he's using like Western words to portray an Eastern concept. Mm-hmm. And that is true. Like you should be, I think that's very practical. Like, yes, you're doing it for yourself a little bit, but if you make mixes for yourself, to prove that you are a valuable engineer, what you do is you possibly sacrifice the song and the relationship with your artist to make yourself feel dominant and to make up for your insecurity. But if you know that the outcome of the song has nothing to do with your self-worth, like those are completely separate and unrelated, and that you are just a servant of the art, the craft itself. And even, which means that the collaboration with the artist, or the lack of like the neuroticism and everything involved, like it's all for the sake of the art. It's for, we're both doing this for a higher purpose.
Yeah.
The art as a worship to God, whatever. This is very, one practical way of reframing this thinking. Becoming more aware. Anyway, I might actually save the more practical advice to the end after we mm-hmm. talk about this. But let's keep going. One of the things that we do naturally as humans, people with low self-esteem become people pleasers. People pleasing isn't actually a bad thing. It's high levels of agreeableness is actually a good thing. And the data shows, if you look at the Big Five and the data correlating with the Big Five personality test, which is a couple things, it's free on the internet. You could take it. It only takes about 20 minutes, if that. And it's the most data-backed personality test. It works across cultures, and it has the most predictive power for relationships, for career, for it's like the most data of any personality test you could possibly do because it is broad enough. It's only 5 points, right? 5 different categories. You should look into this. You should study this. I'm fascinated by it. A lot of psychologists and a lot of studies will use this as a basis to determine things. So one of those categories is agreeableness. Those that are high in agreeableness, it's not a bad thing. People usually go up in agreeableness. Statistically speaking, women are a lot more agreeable than men, like by whole as a gender. Obviously, there are a lot there are obviously a lot of hyper agreeable men and hyper disagreeable women. And this is from a psychologist's perspective, one of the myriad of arguments for gender wage gap is the lack of disagreeableness among women. We're not going to get into that. That can be kind of a heated topic, but that's not the point of this. But the point is, agreeableness isn't bad. People pleasing isn't bad, but it's when you do too much against your own will. Like when you don't want to do that, when you don't want to be agreeable, when you're doing it as a reactionary state of mind, that it becomes hurtful and you're no longer able to keep your boundaries. So for example, and there is a difference between avoiding conflict and being disagreeable.
Oriented.
Yeah, being disagreeable is not exactly the same. It's not a one-to-one relationship with avoiding conflict. So according to Baumeister et al. In 1996, people with low self-esteem are more likely to avoid confrontation, to over-accommodate, or become defensive in perceived conflict. In a studio scenario, that may look like agreeing to revision notes that hurt the mix. I disagree with that, actually. I'm going to talk about that, why I disagree with this. Avoiding honest pushback when the client's idea might not serve the tract. Passive-aggressively labeling client as difficult instead of being honest. I think...
That last one is very important. That's extremely important.
Yeah. So like complaining and saying this person sucks rather than being like, they're honest.
Yeah.
So like very, here's the thing. This is where the double-edged sword is. When you ask people, would you rather have someone be honest with you or to lie with you? Most people will say, almost unanimously, I would rather have people be honest with me.
But you can't handle the truth.
But most people in reality, especially those with low self-esteem, do not in action, do not actually show that they believe in that principle. Mm-hmm. People want to be echo chambered into a self-belief based on lies. And that's like a normal human thing. That is cognitive bias that makes sense. The mind's doing it to protect itself. Mm-hmm. From my understanding, from what I read previously, even the idea, one of the theories behind cognitive biases and why they exist is for the mind to protect itself from realizing how mediocre we actually are. That's like one of the theories as to why cognitive biases exist. I don't know if that's, I also think it's like, more importantly, I don't think it's like agreeing to mix notes that hurt the mix. I think it's more often this represents itself in a way of like taking offense, like taking notes personally.
Yeah.
Like someone says, I don't like the way the drums sound. People hear that for whatever reason to be like, you suck, you're a bad mixer.
Yeah, and that's, versus saying this is a taste difference between the two of us.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that, too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers, while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today. I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that, too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
Exactly. And even getting to the point of this is a taste difference is a level that I don't think most engineers get to.
Yeah.
It's for some reason.
Actually, recently I saw somebody post that they're supposedly like quitting the industry because they're like, I'm tired of my work not being appreciated and being told that they want something different and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you know, chances are it's just taste difference. Maybe you should work with people who have similar tastes. It could be that. But I understood where he was coming from. He's feeling burnt out. But the way it was worded came off very much like, I know my work is good and nobody appreciates it.
Yeah,
which sounds like something else.
That's just straight up projecting. All right, but yeah, that's a really unhealthy state of mind.
Yeah, but that's self-esteem right there.
Yeah, for exactly. So the examples that we have in our notes is a lot of them are like, okay, not standing up for ourselves for the mix revisions. Nine times out of 10, I think that's not the issue. I think it's the opposite. I think people are taking notes way too personally. I think people are being given feedback and then for some reason directly correlate that to their own self-worth. It's like, oh, I don't like the way the drums sound. Can we make them hit less hard? Immediately goes into, you suck and I don't like your taste. And those are completely, like when we're talking about it in this objective scenario, this non-existing scenario,
yeah.
Even listeners of the podcast, you, Lou, like you're laughing. It's funny.
Because I'm like, damn, the drums hit so hard. It sounds so good. Somebody comes back and is like, they're too hard though.
Oh, okay. Like, you're laughing at the specific example.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were laughing at like how funny it is that our mind correlates those two ideas when they're obviously not correlated.
Because you obviously did something that you perceive as really good, but it's just, once again, it's a taste difference for that, the context of this one particular record. Because how many times have you been told, and this might be something that fuels into it, maybe the frustration of being told, oh, I want the drums to slap, I want this, and I want that. And in this one context, it's like, hey, I don't want the drums to slap as hard. And then instead of just hearing out that it's a contextual difference, your brain went to, you suck. It's like, no, you did a good job. You obviously did a good job. It's just in this context, this is just my revision request. Don't take it personal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it is, I'm going to go far. It's like every client that I've lost almost, let me think about this.
One of them was
many of the clients that I lost because of my mistake, not because a disagreement in taste or just like they just wanted to go with somebody else. Not like that. That does happen often. But the number one reason where it's my fault is because of an uncontrolled insecurity where I ended up just calling the artist stupid and wrong, or because I took notes personally and accidentally reacted and communicated in a way that was distasteful.
Mm-hmm.
Those are things that are easily avoidable with some self-awareness and some patience. I honestly think that this is one of the big stumbling blocks of almost every single engineer, creative and service-based professional working in the industry, trying to climb up the industry. Okay, we're going to go into the next one. We're going to talk a little bit about emotional intelligence or EQ, which is funny. This is going to be confusing if I keep calling it EQ, so I'm just going to keep calling it emotional intelligence.
You know, it's funny. I told somebody recently about the conversation we once had. The context was explained, I thought, well enough, but I'll just tell you. Basically, I told him, like, yeah, I remember having a conversation with one of my business partners where we were talking about the difference of IQ and EQ. Usually people with higher IQ have lower EQ, and people with higher EQ have lower IQ, with which he followed up, you have a really high EQ. And I'm like, did you just fucking call me stupid?
Yes, dude.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, he's not wrong, but like contextually.
That's funny. Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah.
So number three is about EQ, but emotional intelligence and studio culture. So there's a research by Daniel Goldman, who did research on emotional intelligence in the workplace and found that Emotional intelligence was responsible for 58% of job performance success in collaborative and service-based careers, which mixing is. Mm-hmm. So within the context of mixing, a high emotional intelligence allows you to interpret a vague or an emotional piece of feedback, like it just doesn't feel right or it's not blue enough, without spiraling or getting defensive.
Mm-hmm.
We often get defensive. Like, getting defensive as a reactionary state is a common reactionary state, and it usually comes from an unchecked ego, unchecked or lack of self-awareness. Mm-hmm. It also helps when you recognize when an artist is anxious about their art and not about your ability, and respond with compassion and professionalism. I'm going to say that again. Having high emotional intelligence helps you to recognize when an artist is being anxious and insecure about their own art and not with your ability.
Yes.
And helps you to respond with compassion and professionalism instead of, again, reactionarily getting also defensive. And now you're both in a spiraling defensive conversation with each other. This happens so often. It is the death. It is yeah. Creative death.
So remember when in the studio, when we would train people, the first rule I had was, if you kill the vibe, you're fired. I'm not going to fire you. The artist is going to fire you. And the vibe is very, very uniquely vague as a concept, right? Like, everybody's like, oh, that's not the vibe. The vibe could be anything. It could be angry vibes. It could be happy vibes. But whatever the vibe is the vibe. But when you're in the studio, it's whatever the artist's vibe is, whatever the session is really like. So if they're in a happier mood, we're trying to keep them happy, this and that. But there are going to be moments where they doubt themselves when they're doing a take and they're not hitting the note, or they're not getting the take that they want because of the performance. They might just be feeling a little down that day, a raspy voice, whatever. Their insecurities are starting to kind of build up in those situations where things just aren't lining up the way they kind of hoped they would. And it could have absolutely nothing to do with you. So sometimes artists don't really have a great way to communicate that they're feeling a little bit uncomfortable, and it's not an issue with you. It's an issue with themselves. But knowing how to read that in the room, you know, learning to read the room, understand the vibe of the room, helps you understand, okay, hey, this is not a me issue. This is a them issue. How can I help them with the session? How can I keep them going? And the better you are at learning to read the room and having that sense of emotional intelligence in that moment, knowing that it's not, they're not attacking you. They're not telling you anything. If they're becoming argumentative with you, that's a different story. But if you could tell that they're feeling a little uncomfortable, it's not because you're a bad engineer. Sometimes they're just a little uncomfortable. And a great engineer in a studio session knows how to actually work with the artist through their emotion, not become their therapist. But some engineers have actually said that sometimes being somebody's recording engineer is also being somebody's therapist, because some songs are a bit more vulnerable than others. Some songs are about high points. Some songs are about low points in the artist's life. So having high EQ as a recording engineer, I would argue, is probably a lot more helpful than in like a mixing situation or a mastering situation, where you have a little more ability to be detached from the artist as far as a proximity context. But when you're in the recording studio, proximity could be as close as 1 foot away from you. You know, so Knowing how to read the room, read the emotions, and whether they're riding high or riding low, and understanding that it 99% of the time has nothing to do with you. Now, if you're a really slow engineer that doesn't pay attention to what's going on and causes a bunch of issues in the session, it might be you. You might be a redneck. But you never heard the stand-up comedy?
It's no, like, no, no,
if
no,
you
no,
got
no, no,
ketchup
no, no, no.
on your steak, you might be a redneck.
No, no, of course, yeah. I just, but, that was funny.
But emotional intelligence will actually help you with your self-esteem, because you start to understand that it's not a problem with you. You can start feeling a little more confident, and you can start focusing on what's in front of you, which is, how can I make this better for them? And trying to figure out a way for you to elevate the level of communication that you have between you and the artist in these situations, which is why a lot of artists have a personal engineer that they like to work with, because they just seem to understand. And because of that, they themselves have a better sense of self-esteem as an artist, which actually then in trade actually makes you feel a bit better about yourself as an engineer.
Yeah.
You may not be the best engineer, but the fact that there's somebody who trusts you implicitly makes you feel a lot better about yourself, which gives you more room to focus on your growth and working with the artists on the actual work versus like focusing on the end result and being like, yeah. Well, I hope they had a good session. I think it went well. And then being kind of, you know, concerned about everything.
This leads me to the idea that the reason why we're bringing this up and the reason why we're making this such a big deal, and we will continue to and have in the past made this such a big deal so let's talk, I don't want to like confuse people, but I'm going to share some data that I love. Again, I love the Big Five as Michael a Jackson? Basis of study. The Big Five study, the personality test. Just look it up. The five categories, let me see if I can pull it up, like agreeableness, openness, extroversion, neuroticism, and conscientiousness. Those are the five. Mm-hmm. So openness, which is creativity, and conscientiousness, which is like logic and cautiousness and finding, like wanting routine and orderliness. These two are opposites. So couple things. Usually, these two categories, openness and conscientiousness, are inversely correlated. Those that are really creative, very high in openness, are very low in conscientiousness. This is why highly creative people are known to be messy. It is, yeah. is across cultures, across people. This is just something that the data shows to be true. There are very, very few people that are high in both. All right.
Mm-hmm.
That actually makes you quite rare. And those are the people that I think succeed in this industry the most. We're not going to get into that. Mm-hmm. There are opposite, like those that are high in conscientiousness, very cautious, very orderly, very clean, likes routine, are very scared of new things and change and chaos.
Yeah.
Right? This is in general. Very few people are high in both. Here's another correlation that and then there's a couple other things, like usually in the American politics, how you vote is directly correlated with, statistically directly correlated with your openness and conscientiousness. High levels of conscientiousness usually vote Republican. High levels of openness usually vote Democratic Party. Fascinating. We're not going to get into that, but let's just say that explains why the music industry tends to create a culture and a political stance that they do. It makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. It's very, very highly open people. That's what it is, right? That's kind of the reason why everything is very emotional people that are using their emotions to create stories and to write songs where they're not very logic-based and try to remove their emotions from the anecdotes, from the stories to prove their point. It's the exact opposite. Another thing that is really interesting is there's two other categories that are directly correlated with neuroticism, and that is extroversion and openness. The higher you are in openness and creativity, it's usually correlated with a higher going up in neuroticism. The more open you are, the more neurotic someone becomes. And the less extroverted, the more introverted you are, the lower in extroversion you are, also the higher the neuroticism goes up. The data in the literature is clear on this. Hmm. What I'm not saying that is that it's better to be extrovert and it's better to be conscientiousness. It is not a black and white, this is better, this is not. I'm just saying what the data is showing. And if you projected that, oh, that makes me better, or oh, that makes me worse, that is a reflection of an insecurity that you have, not the actual truth. Both things are neutral. Being neurotic is a neutral thing. Being open is a neutral thing. Being highly conscientious is a neutral thing. Nothing is better. I'm just talking about patterns, typical patterns. And to be fair, I'm not saying this to toot my own horn, but like I am one of the few that is high in openness and conscientiousness.
You tutor.
Yeah, horn tutor. Which is why I kind of think and talk about the way that I think that I do. And I'm able to kind of like blend ideas on the podcast and people appreciate our perspective, Lou, on the music industry in different ways. We actually have a statistically unique thinking on this sort of stuff. Okay. So let's go into
very bad thinking.
Anyway, so the point is, to your point, sorry, that was a really long description into why people in the music industry and artists tend to be neurotic, tend to be insecure within art, right? And how we can, what did you say? You said like people usually tend to project and like get insecure with each other, and like the artist is just being insecure.
One person feels insecure, and they may not have the best communication tools available to them at that time in their life. And a lot of times artists that are coming up are very, very young and immature still. I'm not saying that older people will have better communication skills, because we all know that there's a lot of old people who are just very not open to new ideas, and they don't know how to communicate that either. They just very stubborn kind of communication styles. So a lot of newer artists, when they feel uncomfortable, they don't want to seem like they haven't been around or that they don't deserve this new opportunity. So then they try to like project confidence, and then that confidence comes off as maybe demeaning. But like, once you actually like start to look at the situation, like, oh, this guy's just not feeling right now. Like this is not a me problem. I can see this is not a me problem. Dude is saying XYZ, but this is really what's going on. I can see that. You know,
it's really, really, it's a really good skill to be able to separate what those problems are, what your tasks are. It's the separation of tasks, according to Adler, which we'll get to later.
Yeah, which is kind of funny, because like outside of music, it's actually been an extremely helpful thing, because I've always said that I'm very selective of who I consider a friend, and I'm very quick to cut people off. And a lot of times it's because if you've worked as a recording engineer in the past, learning to read the room and understand people's like emotions and how they communicate their emotions tells you a lot about a person, or at least where they are at that moment in life. And sometimes you just don't want to be around people with bad communication skills. And we totally understand that, which once again, if you're a bad communicator, you're going to have a hard time in this career.
Yeah, here it is. So if you want to work at a higher level, here are some practical things to think about. Okay, number one, if you're working with like major labels or like high level neurotic artists, mm-hmm. They as a system, they as the label, the managers, the artists, whoever is paying the money, like that system needs an engineer that's not fragile or pushes back with every single time a mixed note is questioned. Like, you know, like they need someone that just gets the shit done. And if you do push back, here's the thing. And I'm gonna say a big thing here. The human desire, the low self-esteem desire to push back, is going to make AI look particularly tasty and delicious to these managers and labels.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a very human thing that actually slows down the creative process.
You know, I heard something recently about the use of AI, and that kind of leans into that, where it's like, some people will ask a question to one of their peers feeling very stupid for having asked that question. Those same people will feel 1,000 times more confident in asking AI for the answer, because they know they're not getting judged in the process.
Yeah. There's a lack of emotional response.
Yeah. Like, so if it's like, do you think the kick drum could be down, asking your engineer that, they don't know if they're going to offend the engineer in asking that. And I had this situation last week where I'm mixing a song for an artist. She asked if her producer, the guy that made the record and made the original rough mix, can come by. And I told her, like, sure, as long as he knows, like, I do not change anything based on saying, like, what he did was bad, but rather you're hiring me to do a job, and I don't want him to take any changes that I make personally. Now, if he doesn't like something going on, she's like, oh, don't worry about what he likes. Worry about what I like. I'm hiring you. This is my song. Like, whatever he likes, obviously, if I liked it, I would have used it. I was like, okay, cool. No worries. Listen, I'm just communicating that he's more than welcome to ask questions, let me know things, but if it's not aligning with what you're asking me to do, I just don't want him to take it personally.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So like the fact that AI doesn't take things personally, to the pragmatic management label, not parasitic. I'm talking to the average pragmatic, practical label system, high level system where deadlines and dates need to be met. AI looks really, really
good.
It looks really good.
Yeah, let's just be honest. Like DK, 2 years ago, did you think we would be incorporating AI into our everyday life this quickly? Think about it. 2 years is a pretty quick timeline to incorporate a new technology that's still at times flawed into like almost daily use. And it's more of a supplemental tool than it is a replacement tool at this moment in most people's lives. At least for me, I use it to fact check like writers and documents that I've hand personally typed out and making them cross-reference each other to make sure that all of them are touching points that
there's
each one mentions.
There's consistencies and stuff, yeah.
Yeah,
that's not a perfect
more of an
tool,
office
but
tool.
I never, well, here's the problem with that question is like, because it's a new thing, of course I wouldn't have been able to imagine how it would be practical in my life.
Yeah.
I knew it would become practical, but I didn't know exactly how.
Yeah.
Well, hold on. I didn't know. That's a strong word. I had a feeling that it would become really practical. I just didn't know exactly how it will. And there's a lot of fear in that uncertainty too. That's fair. Yeah. Okay, so going back, if you're going to work with higher level clients and labels and stuff, another thing, obviously, and this is across low level clients too, like with independent projects and like building your career, you got to be consistent in communication and energy. And did you hear that last one? Not just communication, but in energy too.
Mm-hmm.
Hugely important. Number three, the last one, you have to be low maintenance. You have to be low maintenance. Yes, engineers are so important to the process. Yes, I understand that we are a big deal. The art can't happen without us. That being said, you start acting like you got a big dick and throwing that dick around? Hell no.
You're quickly getting fired. Yeah.
Like you are just a small piece of the cog, a small cog in the machine, an important cog, but a small cog nonetheless. And the faster you recognize that and realize that that has nothing to do with your self-esteem and that's just pragmatic and practical. There's no emotional drama during revisions or during collaboration. Labels and high level artists, imagine working with Ariana Grande or like Ed Sheeran. People that aren't necessarily known to be neurotic, you know, just like normal big pop stars. John Mayer, right? I don't know any intense horror stories, like emotional horror stories with them. Maybe there are. I don't know about it. Either way, regardless, I'm going to use them as an example. Imagine if me, the engineer, is like not being communicative or like one day was super high energy and excited to work with them and another day I wasn't. Or like I would just push back on notes and would be like just nasty to work with. No, we need the kick drum up, you know? Especially being not the producer, which is different as a mixer and knowing your role as well. This is the thing. High self-esteem engineers don't need to prove anything. They're focused on serving the record. This goes back to my original practical point. Focus on serving the record. Focus on serving the art and not yourself. Don't even focus on serving and impressing the managers or the artist. Make the record the best that it can be to the best of your ability. High self-esteem engineers don't need to prove anything.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move into the next topic, Lou. We're running long on time. So, which is kind of some basic ideas of how to build healthy self-esteem in your work. So in my mind, there's two ways, and this is more of like a Buddhist mindset. Processing is one. In therapy, as well as in Buddhism, they teach you that one is first to become aware, like focus on building awareness to when your body and your mind, your thinking and your body is reacting to these moments, when you are in a reactionary state of mind and you find yourself taking notes personally.
Mm-hmm.
Find yourself being unable to distinguish the separation between the art and self-worth. That first level of becoming aware is a very high level skill. Like most people do not become aware of this thing. That's not true. I don't want to say most people, but I'm going to make it sound like most people because I hope that people try to find it a challenge, to try to look for the ways. So I'm going to encourage you. So number one, stop attaching your identity to your work. You are not your mix. Lou and I, every year, every month, possibly depending on how many projects that we're doing, we get denied at various levels. Just because we're doing better with our work, there might be some correlation with like how often we're getting denied. like, and that may be more correlated, like how much we're qualifying our clients or like how long we've been working with these clients and like the set expectations previously in previous years, rather than like, but with new clients, we get denied just as much as someone that's kind of new. Yeah. You know, who's to say that that's not true? So we need to, one, stop attaching our identity to our work. Listen, there's a huge thing. This is something I teach my kids all the time. Like, sometimes my boy says stupid things. He's six. He's going to say some stupid stuff. Does that make him stupid? No. There's a difference between being stupid and feeling stupid. There's a difference between being creative and feeling creative, or being uncreative and feeling uncreative in moments. Don't confuse moments and feelings for beliefs and realities.
Mm-hmm.
And identity. Beliefs and identity. These things are completely separate.
Yeah.
Some days, I feel like a bad mixer. Does that make me a bad mixer? Hell no. Right? Some days, I feel racist. Does that make me racist? Probably. Actually, that's
You know, the example I was going to give, some days I feel like seafood. Does that make me pescatarian? But you're like, does that make me racist? Probably.
No,
what was the comedian? Was it Shane that said, like, racism is like hunger? It's like, you may not feel racist now.
Oh, that's Theo Vaughn.
Yeah, he's like, but somebody cuts you off on the freeway and you're
a cheeseburger cuts you off on the freeway. You get a little hungry. And by the way, that cheeseburger is whatever you thought it was.
Yeah. Was it with pickles? That's your decision.
Yeah. What else did he say? He's like, you know, I have some, you know, I'm trying not to be racist, but I got some flare ups in traffic here. I'm on the front lines. I'm on the front lines of not being racist, trying not to be racist.
Which I feel like is the theme of America after about 2005. Yeah. Before anyway. 2005, shit was still flying pretty frequently.
Anyway, okay, so this is another thing too. This is really, really important and needs a lot of awareness. Number two, practical, how to build healthy self-esteem in your work. Practice honest detachment.
Yeah.
Revision notes are not rejection. Revision notes are collaboration.
This is huge because, once again, going back to this client that I'm currently working with, we work with each other once in a great while because they don't just put out records like other artists who are actively like month-to-month releases and all that kind of stuff. In fact, they don't tour. This is more like a passion of theirs more than anything, but they do a good job. They actually have some cool records and they surround themselves with very well-off people. So like the producers involved are very well-known. So they put a budget behind things, but like I said, there's one where, the producer is involved. He just wants to sit in, see how things are going. He's interested in mixing, more in his career. So I said, that's cool. Come on in. As long as there's no like ego situations going on, as long as I can continue to do my work the way I do it. But there's something to be said about the revision notes and when they come in, what they're about, and that understanding that the revision notes had nothing to do with whether the kick drum was a sample or an actual recorded kick. It has more to do with the record and what they are looking for the end result of the record. You may not see their end result all the time, and that's not a personal issue. That's more just a communication thing. Like, oh, okay, I was actually thinking of the kick drum to be a little fluffier this time. It's like, oh, okay, cool. No worries. Yeah, I'll make the kick a little fluffier versus being like, they might just say, I don't like the kick. Okay, what about the kick do you not like? Oh, it just feels a little too, I don't know, hip-hop-y. It's like, okay, cool. No worries. Let me see. Do you have an example of what you're looking for? No worries. And just being open to changing it to what they want makes everything about the process so much smoother. It makes them feel a lot more confident in their ability to communicate these needs with you. Because if you take things personally, or you seem to have more often than not pushback against their notes, saying that their notes may not align with what you think they're, let's always use that word, it's their record, what you believe their record should sound like, you might just come off as combative the whole time. And then they lose confidence in being able to communicate these revision notes. And it's not that, oh, suddenly my clients give me less notes, I must be getting better. It might just be a communication barrier issue between you and your client, that they're saying, okay, I guess that's the best I'm gonna get from this person. Because anytime I bring something up, they seem a little difficult to work with. And then you hear about them finding somebody new who was just a little more open and willing to hear them out on revisions. And they just seem to have a better time. The mix may not sound as nice. You know, let's say this other person is just newer. But what I found is people who are newer, a lot of times are more open to listening when they come in with the confidence of saying, I will get better with time if I keep an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Amen. A lot of people who are in this midpoint in their career, there's what is that curve? Is it the Dunning-Kruger curve? Whose curve is it?
Yes, the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Yeah, where, like, I guess in the case of self-confidence in these revisions and where you land in openness and communication, at first you're very open, but you don't know much. So you kind of, like, know that
it's
you
naivety.
Need to be open. Yeah. But then there comes a point where you start getting a little confident, and so you might start pushing back on certain notes because that confidence is going up. And then it starts to bite you in the butt, and then you start kind of coming back down to earth where you're like, okay, I know better of what I'm doing and I know I can do the job, but I have to remain open or else it's going to start fighting me again.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah.
So we're going to move on to the next thing here. So again, I'm going to repeat that again. Practice honest detachment. Revision notes are not rejection. We do this all the time too. I like how in the notes we talked about how sometimes the artist is projecting their own insecurity on the song, and that's why the notes sound brutal. Not because of the insecurity on the note on your mix, but it's because of their own. We do this as mixers all the time. Mm-hmm. We just say, sorry, that song isn't that good, because we're projecting of how we felt on how we did on the mix, not because the song is bad, but we're presenting it that way. So there's like, and then people So it's the same thing. Humans do this constantly all the time. So I think that's really important. It's like, this happens all the time. Like, notes felt in the past have felt more personal when they were just like more straight up, no butter, no brown nosing, no like complimentary language.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels like really gross and like bad, like they're attacking me, but they're not. They're not. They really aren't. Very rarely are they. It's like a very rare thing. I think I may have had that, like, actually, I don't even think I've had that, like, maliciously intentfully malicious notes. I don't think I've ever had a single time in my career.
Mm-hmm.
But I've felt that they were malicious many times in my career. So it's just one of those things. Seek feedback regularly, not just praise. High self-esteem individuals seek correction, not protection. Like, look for feedback. Look for ways to improve. Not, don't just like
communicate close and openness blindly to actually hear them out.
Yeah. Don't just blindly seek validation. You don't need validation. You are not your mix. You understand, like, getting, like, trying to massage your clients and managers and, like, the people to just, it's like, the need to be like, is it good? Ask, is it good though? Do you like it? And the need to confirm that validation, like, it's not a good thing. And then also it forces people to become overly effusive or to brown nose. Overly effusive is a more direct, complicated way of saying, like, someone that is over complimentary, like says too many compliments where it's no longer authentic, where they're trying to get, it feels like they're trying to get something
out
of you.
Brown noser.
Brown noser, exactly.
Come on, get your nose out my ass.
So again, don't overcompensate insecurity by becoming overly effusive as well.
Yeah.
Another thing, have clear communication systems. You got to be communicating, whether that's through text or through email, whatever way that you decide. Whatever boundaries you set, like, you need to communicate with your clients. The more your clients trust the process, the less they challenge you emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that again. The more your clients trust your process, the less they challenge you emotionally. If they know what to expect, if they know that, if you give them updates at the end of every single day, you text all your clients, like, this is how far we got with this mix. I'm planning on doing this. Your mix should be done. If you just text them once every single day, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine how much more trust they would put in your process, into your mixing, how much satisfied they would be as customers. Just, like, communicate with your clients, with whatever systems and whatever systems that you have, whether it's through email, text, whatever, calling them. If that is giving them one update at the end of every single workday, or just talking, texting them when you pull up their projects every single time, or being clear with when you're going to turn around projects, being clear that right now I'm not going to be able to give you your instrumental and your alt mixes until the next week. Being clear about these things, not being afraid to tell them something that they don't want to do. Like, hey, I know you're in a rush. I can't do this. Can you work with me, please? Like, just be, or like, it's even with money. So don't avoid the conversation of money.
Oh, have that first if you can.
Have that early and before you start.
Yeah.
Don't start before talking about money. Yeah. And it's awkward and nobody wants to talk about it, but you must, right?
And this is such a huge thing when it comes to self-confidence, because it plays a factor depending on where you're at, on how much you're actually making, because self-confidence, this self-esteem issue, could be the reason that you're charging $300 versus $700 versus $1,000. Now, there is bridges to cross to be at a certain point sometimes. You know, if you have no history, no connections, nobody can give a referral, if you don't have like a at least an hour-long playlist of quality records that you've mixed or been a producer of or whatever, you know, it's kind of hard to pitch a higher number. You know, it is. You're fighting an uphill battle, but there's a certain point in your career where you've done enough and you know that you're in the room with certain people, but you're still charging less because you want to come off as easygoing and like very affordable, this and that, but it starts to work at your detriment. Because some people ask the question of like, well, why is he charging less? He seems like he should be charging more. Is he not that good? Is it this? Is he not as involved as he say he is? It could be a bunch of things, but as the person pitching the number, it might just be because in that moment, you don't feel confident enough that you deserve a certain value. And that you yourself might be the reason that you're not actually getting more. It was something that at one point I did have to learn that lesson. And the way I learned it was, I remember being in the studio. This was during In the Mix, where I was still charging like, I don't know, I think it was like $500 a mix or whatever, like cash to most artists that would just hit me up out of the blue, like people I didn't work with. The guy heard the mixes. He heard about all the work I've done. And he looked at me. He's like, I'll be honest, I thought you were like $1,000 a mix. I'm like, oh, I'm not charging that. He's like, why not? He's like, you realize you're the only person telling you that you're not worth $1,000. If you told me it was $1,000 a mix, I would have said yes.
That's fair. There's something to be said about the marketplace versus individuals.
Exactly. I understand like, that, but there's—
And white glove processes.
Yeah, but yeah. In that moment, it was self-esteem, the reason that I wasn't asking for more. And obviously, everything's contextual.
It might have been practical. It might have been a practical decision based on the demands of the marketplace, yeah, or your perceptions of the demand of the marketplace.
Right now, we're in a market where it has to be practical, right?
No, it's right. Always been like, especially with higher levels of
Well, I'm just saying about uncertainty and what's going on in the world right now.
I'm mostly thinking timeline. Like also just transparency. Like everybody kind of knows what everybody charges.
Yeah, yeah. For
so
the most
like,
part,
there's something to be said that like how much you charge is also partially a PR move. Mm-hmm. There's also something about like the psychology of consumers where like the more you charge, it must be a better product, even though those are unrelated and non-correlated at all.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different complicated things, and it could, in that moment, you presented that was a self-esteem issue, and in that moment, if that's how you felt, that's probably what it was. But I'm saying in the real world, we don't know. It could have been a lot of other things.
Yeah.
Right? But anyway, so I'm gonna move on here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is just like Eastern philosophy, a Zen mindset, kind of like a razor to think about. Just do your best and let go of the outcome. Just do your best and let go of the outcome. Serve the art, let go of the outcome. This is also a big main topic of the book, The Practice by Seth Godin. It is now a few years old. The Practice by Seth Godin talks about the separation of the practice and the art. Work of creativity is the craft itself and not based on the outcomes. If you watch The Wild Robot, which I finally watched last week, great movie, love the movie, highly rated, highly recommended.
The Wild Robot?
The Wild Robot. It's the robot that's in the woods hanging out with all the animals and stuff. There's a character in the woods where everybody's calling him crazy. It's a It's a beaver that's cutting down a huge tree. And they're like, everybody's making fun of him because like, he's never going to be able to cut that down. And then the beaver says something really high intelligence. He's like, ah, the art is the practice, knowing that the tree will fall eventually. I forgot the exact quote, but knowing that the tree, the falling of the tree is a matter of time, but my passion is to work on this. This is the art. The art is me working on it, not on whether it falls, because I know it will fall eventually. Mm-hmm. It's more of a certainty. Anyway, so just some more practical takeaways. So, and some going back and reviewing some of these things. If you want more returning clients, you got to build your emotional self-awareness. If you want less conflicts during revisions, you need to learn to separate your self-worth from your mix. You want to work with bigger names and bigger artists, be the calmest person in the room.
That's
huge. And
be a problem solver.
Yeah, there's so many things that we need to address.
There's so many ideas
bouncing around.
It would take so long to go over everything.
It would. And this is going to be spread across.
Which is why we started this episode saying that this is a topic we go over so many times, because there's so much to say.
There's also something to be said, like sometimes you do suck and you did do a bad job.
Oh yeah, I feel like that all the time. No, I'm just
kidding. There's a difference between feeling like that and actually doing that. I mean, it's hard to determine that with certainty because this work is so subjective. Mm-hmm. But there's some practical benefit to take an introspective approach and wonder, like, look to improve. If those feelings should lead to improving and desiring more experience rather than blame. Like, one way of determining and kind of doing a heat check on your emotional, like, emotional state of being right now is like, does this encourage me to want to do better, or does this make me blame others more? And it doesn't matter if others are actually to blame or not. There is nothing practical, psychologically, emotionally, practically, from a skill level, to take away when you blame someone else. That's the thing. There's nothing to learn. There's nothing to grow from. There's no way to improve. You just deny yourself the opportunity from growth when you blame someone else, even if it's justified. So there is something very, like, we're not even talking emotionally. We're not even talking about like, be the bigger man. This isn't some alpha male podcast content. I'm talking about this from a straight, pragmatic, practical approach. If you choose to look inwards, and understand that it may not have been your fault, because this is a subjective creative field. But you look inwards and try to improve yourself and your craft and your experience for the better over time, stacked on top of each other. If you can separate insecurity and a lack of self-worth from this desire to grow more, then you will become better. And there's something about experience. And as much as this is a subjective world, a subjective creative art world with mixing, there are good mixers and there are bad mixers. I'm not going to be able to determine who is who and what is what necessarily without specific examples and without an understanding that this is my personal insight. But that being said, there's something to be said. At the end of the day, some engineers get hired a lot and make a lot of money and do very well, and some engineers don't.
You know,
so
it's
is, yeah.
I was going to say, because you mentioned, like, it's hard to tell without, like, context, like, without the material being compared, right? But the material being compared to, I think it was Manny Marroquin, where they asked him in an interview, saying, how many times has the end result been in your vision? And he responded saying, never. It's never in my vision. Like, the end result of the mix is never what I thought it should be. It's what the artist thought it should be. You know, and being that malleable is why he's so successful.
Yeah. What I thought the artist thought it should be is kind of like the more meta true version. Anyway, and the last thing here, and this is to kind of close it off. There's many types of people. There's people that are like hyper self-aware and incredibly insecure. And they're very introspective and they're internalizers. They blame themselves on everything. And it kind of becomes cyclical, this self-blame. And like, I'm the reason why it's not good enough. If that is your struggle, then you need to separate and become practical of when it truly is your fault and when it's not. And you'll find that most of the time, it's literally just it's not your fault. Yeah. Right? If you are the type of person that is an externalizer, where your immediate, and this, by the way, you should ask your friends what you are, because it's very difficult to
to tell yourself.
Yeah, and especially, to be fair, if you're like, nope, I'm not going to say that. No, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that either. Sorry, I'm like kind of censoring myself because I want to be. All right, if you are an externalizer, I think that that's a horrible thing. Personally, I think that you are actually one of the diseases in this world. Lots of people are externalizers. They blend other they blame other people and refuse to take responsibility. Yes. There's some truth to that. Sometimes other people are rude and are the reason. But if you tend to balance on, if you tend to overblame other people and then not look inward, this is a big problem. This is a huge problem. You will, life and others will naturally label you as an asshole. Mm-hmm. And in a world of hypersensitive, emotional, neurotic creatives, even a small asshole label can destroy a career. Yeah. So learn to look inward, at least for your career, if you're trying to do this seriously. Like, at least a little bit. There's some places, and there's a difference between being honest and direct and being a disagreeable asshole. There's a huge difference, not for this episode. Last thing, a note on authenticity that I really, really love. A couple things that there's a couple backwards backwards philosophies within the world of Zen that is really, really important to understand. Is one, we've all seen that SpongeBob episode where the guy hides the pickles under his tongue and SpongeBob forgets how to make a Krabby Patty, right? Yeah. There's a Zen saying, the frog asks the millipede, how do you coordinate and walk with so many legs? The millipede stops to think and tries to explain how it does it, and in the process of thinking, forgets how to walk, what once came naturally to him. In the world of Zen, in the world of Christianity, the natural man is an enemy to God. In the world of Zen, the natural man knows how to breathe, eat, and feed itself without being taught how to. The natural man is to be trusted. And if the natural man is not to be trusted, then even the idea that the natural man is not to be trusted comes from a perverted mind, and thus that idea cannot be trusted in itself. Getting really meta. Trust the natural man. Don't overthink your process. Like, let flow state happen. Be authentic. The second double-edged sword, and another backwards thinking, another deeper insight, is the search for authenticity in itself is not authentic. Looking for authenticity and that pressure to become authentic and find your voice, to find your sound, to find your client, the push for authenticity makes you inauthentic. Mm-hmm. True authenticity is more of like the spontaneity of a child. It does not take much thought. There's not a lot of intention. It is it's spontaneous and it just happens. There's a quote and a poem from a Japanese philosopher and poet that I really love, and this is translated to English. I think we'll close this out with this quote, if I can freaking find it. Give me 5 more seconds. Found it. This is from poet Kamiya Meiko. When we wake from sleep, we are greeted by the morning. We did not create the morning. It somehow came to give us the chance to live another day. We wake up and discover the morning. The meaning of life is like the morning. Maybe it's another episode that we talk about ikigai and misogi and how those things are way too westernized, and the Western understanding of those two words are almost 180 degrees the opposite of how Westerners, motivational speakers in the West, use those words. Listen, we don't know why we do art. We don't know why we're driven to do this stupid thing called mixing. Why we're in the crossroads of technology and logic and creativeness. We don't know why we got here. And here's the thing. Just because we don't know why Godzilla exists and why Godzilla is able to blow fire out of its mouth, that doesn't make it less cool. you don't need to explain where Godzilla came from, why it can do the things it does, the specific organs that it has. You don't need to explain that to understand that Godzilla is cool. By the way, that is from a previous episode talking about how the West is incapable of leaving things ambiguous and must over-explain everything.
So
and the Eastern...
Did you know that there's actually a very famous case of what you mentioned earlier? You made the SpongeBob reference, but in baseball, it's called the Yips.
The Yips?
Yeah. So I forget the name of the pitcher. Rick Ankiel, whatever. Point is, Rick was an up-and-coming MLB star. He was really, really well-known for his pitching. He was like maybe like 19, 20, 21 kind of age group. But he was like, early on, and so he was being anticipated to be one of the greatest pitchers, but they kept asking him, like news reporters, coaches, all that. They're like, "Yo, can you explain your pitch? What's your mindset? How are the mechanics of it?" It got so he had to think about it now, and ended up losing his career. He started suddenly bombing at the plate every single game, but then later in his career, he came back as like one of the best batters, which is kind of hilarious. It was a whole left turn, but he was otherwise, he said in interviews, "I don't actually think about it. I don't think about my pitches. Like if I had to think about it, I guess I turn my wrist this way or I do this and that." But in overthinking it, he lost it.
There it is.
He lost what came naturally.
And this is one of the dangers, not just for people listening, but for me and Lou, like teaching these things and learning, trying to articulate them. There's the risk of we losing how to do it because it's so natural to us.
Or people asking questions while you're mixing because kind of in this flow state. And then if you had to stop to explain the compressor, and now you're kind of thinking about why you chose a certain number or why you went slow or fast, you're like, I'm losing the forest for the trees.
Yeah. And also like those that are paralyzed by the need for more information, like people that perpetually
study.
I call them like people like I called Braden out on this, where like we did a lesson with Braden and he went to school, he graduated school, he was going to more school for audio, and he paid lessons for me at the beginning. And I straight up told him, it's like, bro, I know you want to learn and I know that like you understand that you need to learn, but you sound like an we were friends. This wasn't mean in the moment.
Within
but
context
he,
of friends.
He had, this is his big moment of reality. I was like, bro, you sound like you're using education as an excuse to be a bitch. You just need to start. Just do it.
It's kind of funny because it's a good thing you use the context of like, hey, just so everybody knows.
That was like a life-changing moment for him. He jokingly calls me a bitch ever since then. I don't usually call people a bitch. That's like a very, like, it was appropriate to that moment with the context. Like Braden, for him, like that became like an inside joke. Like that was such a life-changing moment. He's like, you're right. I just need to start. There are some people that overcompensate insecurity with overlearning and not enough doing.
Yeah.
And this is one of those, don't do that.
Trial by fire, baby.
Don't do that. The only reason why you should be going to school for something subjective like music is for a student visa to be in America. I'm kidding. Or to find your future spouse. That's the.
Did he meet his wife at school?
Dude, you never know. Everybody, I did. He did. Actually, he did. And I did.
Found mine on MySpace.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah. And it
talking about
started
MySpace
with
in 2025.
Band. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Anyway, we're stopping the podcast. Don't overthink it. Be kind to yourself. Give yourself lots of grace. Give your others lots of grace. The more forgiveness you give yourself, you'll find it'll be natural to give other people more forgiveness too. Just do it for the love, for the passion. I think I've said everything that I want to say, and anything more that I say right now kind of takes away from the original message. So
then shut the fuck up. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I will. So on that note, if you want more practical tips on how to be a better mixer and how we address the nuance of mixing techniques, mastering techniques, production techniques, and we talk about why, when this specific technique presented by someone like Rick Rubin or CLA, or maybe not Rick Rubin, but like more like CLA or Jesse Ernster. And we talk about why that is good, why it could be bad. And we talk about the nuance of that stuff. If you like that and technical technical tips, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/Patreon or /exclusive to get access to our exclusive content. Also, if you want to just be a free member of the Patreon, we have a free tier of the Patreon where you get access to free things like free PDFs that you can download and get updates for free. Like see what you're missing out on. And like if I have like messages for everybody and stuff, like just sign up for free or sign up for the exclusive content. If you just want to give us, that's the only one of the main ways to like financially support us and unlock 250 plus episodes of exclusive content as well. Just basically like just double the library of the Mix of Music podcast content if you want. If you want to do that. All right. Anyway, on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that, too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers, while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
You already love the Mixing Music podcast, but what if I told you that there are over 250 exclusive episodes just waiting for you? That's right. On our Patreon, you get ad-free technical deep dives every single week on mixing, mastering, and production. If you want more knowledge, more techniques, and zero fluff, head to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start leveling up your skills today.